there, but that means nothing tonight. Everything is in its place and everything is right. And I'll take a chance and ask you to dance. Let's make sure the silhouette will last. But who knows if tomorrow will come at all. And I've made mistakes and that's okay. Cause if I have learned anything, I've learned to trust my guts, not my head. And I'm sure when we look back on this, our minds won't be filled with regret.
Ritual Reads from Load the Guns, published by Blackheath Books. Load the guns, when the dark is day and the sun shines nevermore, and a lone bugler appears at the end of the street playing a melancholy last call. That is the time to load the guns, to load the guns, to walk out of the shack job, to kick the deadbeat partner into touch, to yell in the middle of the road, to howl at the moon, to dance with the devil, and kiss the first person that you meet, tongues included, and shake the hand of a stranger. Put flowers in your hair, smile crazily, and remember that you were once young, and the world was once young, and nothing matters anyway, because death comes to us all.
This is the heavy, heavy monster sound, the nuttiest sound around. So if you're coming off the street, and you're beginning to feel the heat, well, listen, Buster, you better start to move your feet to the rockin'est, rock-steady beat of madness. One step beyond!
I'm UV Ray, and I'm going to read six poems from my supposed forthcoming collection, Road Trip and Other Poems. This first poem is the title poem, called Road Trip. Cranked up on gin, taking me along on a 100 miles an hour suicide drive, the cigarette stub in her mouth still lit. 3 grams of speed in a bloodstream, watching mountains fall behind us in parenthesis, and the asphalt bone dry in the heat as crack lips stretch into the distance. Between gas stations and motels, redlining the V8, son of a bitch, with soundtrack on the radio, Generation X. This one is Bird with Broken Wings. The hardest part is coming down. I am a bird with broken wings, blowing through the city streets like newspaper in the wind. There's no more amphetamine rush of streetlights frenzied before my eyes. I'm just dying in the embers, and not even riding subway trains at midnight or sticking a needle in my veins solves the sense of desolation. The exhilaration has gone, and just dissolving into the ether of another bland sunrise reflected in shop windows. Social engineering. Staring from the window of a fourth floor apartment, there is nothing left. All these streets look the same, grey shadows of tower blocks stretch where traffic lights alternate along the Queensway, and washing machines spin in some deserted launderette. Everything operates on automatic as dawn ignites a glitter of frost on the pavements and the city awakes to the sterile sound of digital radio replacing the sparkle of transistors, the once warm emanation of valves. And nothing at all remains now but the fragile grasp for the cigarettes on the bedside table. This one's Night Train. Don't know what city this is. From the car, a collage of images shift where the brilliant white lights along the suspension bridge reflect in bombed out stares of heroin injected irises. And passing through, you know only that the uselessness is endless, because no matter how much you try to dissect it all, you're only ever scratching the impenetrable surface in a world of billboard ads, coke machines and video games. This one's I Don't Like the Film. Feel like I could turn the handle of an old projector in an empty movie theatre and let the world outside cease to exist. I wonder whether I should fill this void inside me with some other personality. Someone who is stronger than I am. Like Rudolph Valentino or Robert Mitchum, to think of the girls they've kissed. All I ever wanted was to watch life unfold in a series of fabricated images. Flip, 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 flip. To feel nothing real and to leave behind nothing of myself. But a blank face staring into the lens of your understanding. This last one was a poem written in New York and called Apartment Block. Staring through the cracked window pane, this city is a wasteland. I'm out of gin and I'm stone cold broke. The streets as hot as a gunshot wound. And I'm asphyxiated by the sweat fumes rising from the subway grills. In my room, paint peels from the walls like a sidewinder shedding its skin in the heat. Whilst towards the rooftops of Brooklyn, trains screech along Williamsburg Bridge. East River glittering in the sunset. The gods and angels are dead. New York as twilight falls, all lit up. On my windowsill, the empty coffee cup.
Hi, I'm Joseph Ridgewell. This piece I'm going to read is about anti-fame. As we near the second decade of the new century, an interesting shift in the demographic of fame and modern celebrity has begun to appear on the scene, or non-scene, as it were. It's a phenomenon of anti-fame, which in time must lead to the death of the cult of celebrity. Anti-fame has already begun to emerge among the denizens of underground literature and is spread into other areas of the creative arts. Not so long ago, a new wave of writers, disillusioned with mainstream publishing, turned to underground presses to publish their work. An outburst of online publishing also appeared, heralding the dawn of an exciting alternative to traditional publishing. Yet the online scene was of varying quality and quickly ran out of steam. The small underground presses, however, flourished and proliferated. It was in this obscure environment that a few select writers found the idea of anti-fame a desirable state of affairs. There are certain publishers who fit the anti-fame ethos. In each instance, they are wholly independent, receive no external funding, and have no marketing department, and refuse to sell books through Amazon, that monstrous conglomerate. In some cases, the books are of such limited runs as to be almost impossible to buy. As for the authors, they share indifference or a point-blank refusal to promote their own books in any way whatsoever, eschewing social networking sites, public readings, and in some cases, even denying authorship. This is the beginnings of the philosophy of anti-fame. The books must stand up on their own, find a way in the world through word of mouth, and in no way be tainted by the forceful marketing of authors as celebrities. Soon, anti-fame will infiltrate all other areas of public life. It is not only writers who are disillusioned with the complete lack of integrity and originality in the world's current fame-hungry climate. Names would be the first major casualties of the anti-fame phenomenon. as anti-fame gathers pace, no forward-thinking company or brand will want to be associated with anything or anyone that represents the old way of thinking. Major stars will be shunned. Social networking sites will crash, become defunct, or emerge sometime later as mere curiosity pieces. Celebrities who have built careers on being famous for being famous will become increasingly tragic figures. Suicide amongst this doomed fraternity will be commonplace. Magazines that cater purely for celebrity culture will go out of business. Celebrity weddings will become a thing of the past. The new buzzword will be exclusivity. True talent in any of the arts arenas will be valued only on its own merit as an independent entity. In the anti-fame future, people will find that unless you are a no one, then you will be nobody. Facebook now has 500 million users. It may go on to get over a billion, but the writing is already on the wall. Mark Zuckerberg once claimed that privacy was a thing of the past, but he was wrong. In fact, the exact opposite is true. Social networking sites are a thing of the past, doomed to occupy the same cultural wasteland as the CB radio. So what does it all mean? It's more than possible that we're about to enter a very interesting period of human interaction, with fame, celebrity, and the pursuers of such becoming major casualties. I call it the Greta Garbo syndrome. All creative arts will eventually be produced and sold in a completely different format. Exclusivity will be key, which may even usher in a new era of social elitism. All the millions of artists striving to make a splash via social networking sites will be forced to reappraise the situation. If the momentum of anti-fame builds, they run the risk of looking at best outdated and at worst vulgar. Of course, there will be winners and losers, but just that not many people will know who the winners are. Joseph Ridgewell, Summer 2010, London. Top Tips to Becoming a Writer by Joseph Ridgewell, in any order. 1. Do not, under any circumstances, attend a creative writing course, retreat, or evening class. These are for mentally disturbed people whose close proximity may cause you to become depressed. 2. Read like a motherfucker. Anything from advanced arithmetic to astrophysics. Read all the greats of literature, as they will teach you a good deal. Do not read any current bestsellers. This type of book can do serious damage to the creative soul of any budding artist. 3. Do not listen to the opinions of anyone who works in the publishing industry. These freaks don't know what the fuck they are doing. They must be ignored at all times and often derided for their stunning ignorance of what constitutes a writer. This includes all editors, literary agents, slush pile flunkies, and the PA girl whose father is rich and her mother good looking. 4. Never ever plagiarize, but do still. Best in literature is a virtue. 5. Write every single day for a solid 10 years. Every single day. After that, do the fuck what you like. 6. Do not expect to earn any money whatsoever. Harboring such a delusion can only end in tears and you may end up homeless. 7. Do not be overly influenced by any writer you may or may not admire. Including me, in fact especially me. This will lead to imitation, which is to be avoided at all costs. 8. Be afraid, very afraid, of academics and academia. This is a one-way route to complete and utter failure as an artist, though hast been warned. 9. Live a little, travel the world, get out of the comfort zone, take a trip to the edge, shoot a man in Reno, consume a mountain of drugs, get boozy all the time, as drink brings luck to a writer, take part in an orgy, fuck both sexes in the arse, howl at the moon, one arm waving free, the other holding a bottle of wine, swim naked in the ocean, go dancing, sleep out under the stars, go wandering, climb a volcano, sing rebel songs into the long lost night, watch a sunrise, sunset, clouds view, get the freaking idea, fuckers, stars.
It's not, it's inside. Time to lose. Jump around breasts, dark nipples and all was showing above the sleeping bag. And instantly what? I wanted to jump. I'm working at Manly Wolf, peanut gig. Gotta go now, otherwise I'll be late. Rosie looked at me like I'd gone mad. Hill would see you, otherwise I'm living on the streets. Rosie stood up and walked over.
Body sleeping over. Bag.
Body odor. But even so, it was still a beautiful moment. When she pulled away, she looked, and with those simple words, a beautiful moment transmuted into one filled with mad shooting gallery. And then soared straight into another galaxy, far away and long ago. The sun was shining and it was pleasantly warm. The Sydney skies were dramatically blue. I began smiling. But strangely, I didn't smile back. I turned the heads away.
Caramelised nuts.
Where to go for lunch? It was straightforward. The barmaid didn't have to serve any customers. The barmaid kept an eye on my schooner. On a return ferry ride, my thoughts turned to my fledgling relationship. Save money and take her away to somewhere safe. Somewhere far away from the mean streets,
sleeping peacefully.
I hope so.
At the end, disgusting mug.
As I approached, he gave me a funny look and a black cloud of him. I decided the best tactic was to say nothing.
Not even hello.
I turned around.
What?
What are you talking about? He would ejected a large glob. This was the second time the old goat had insulted my one true love. Collapsed onto the bed, fully clothed, knackered, beat, but content. I could still wiped smell. Off. It was then, and only then, I noticed it was missing.
Still no laptop.
There could be only one culprit. Rosie. The girl. I couldn't believe it. She'd done it. My fucking laptop. The only material possession.
How?
What do you mean how? Paper and pens, you mug.
Computers
at Rosie Odyssey. Not in Virgil, Keats, Byron, Lee Poe.
Those greats
didn't even have pens. They used chalk, slate, quills. I quickly jotted down three O's. One after the other. Bitch one. Bitch two.
Fiery metaphors and accusing similes.
I stood up. Struck a defiant pose, nothing poetic, no beauty. I tore the papers into a thousand pieces and threw them out of the window.
I didn't even look for Rosie along the main drag. Waste of time.
Shoot a fucker. I hope the crazy bitch ODs, I thought evilly. Then I returned to my room.
I left my heart to the sapphire's round casing. I sold my soul with my cigarettes to the black market man. I've had the Vietnam cold turkey from the ocean to the silver city, and it's only I the vets could understand. About the long-forgotten dark side guarantees, how there were no V-Day heroes in 1973, and how we sailed in a Sydney harbor. I saw an old friend, but I couldn't kiss her. Well, she was mine, and I was home to Lucky Land.
Cause you can only be young, but only It's later than you think.
Enjoy yourself
while you're still in the pink. The years go by as quickly as a wink.
Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think.
Hey! Look, honey, at that beautiful funeral, I've never seen so many flowers.
Yeah, he was a nice man too, but never had any fun. Didn't have time, just worked and made money. He didn't even have time.